The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
And now, from the rooftop of the Rockies, it's Backbone Radio with Matt Dunn.
Welcome to Hour 2 of Backbone Radio. Here it is, May 24th, 2020. An extended Memorial Day weekend. Not doing barbecue because it is still gray, cloudy, and rainy across town here. But maybe tomorrow, the actual Memorial Day, Monday, will be a little different story. But yeah, welcome back. I'll get off to the phones here in a second. But one thing I wanted to mention, I've got a lot in store, some of the big Spygate developments and so forth, which are pretty heavy. Deep State is getting cornered. But there's been a very interesting spat on Twitter. Maybe you'd call it a spat. I don't know what you'd call it, but President Donald Trump is a fighter. This man fights. He knows how to fight, and he has been fighting hard ever since he came down that escalator. And he does not let stuff go by him, you know, and if people are going to attack him, he attacks back. He's the only Republican that seems to have this attitude. Most Republicans are laydowns. They roll over, they play dead, they live in fear of the media, okay? And the reason why Trump is the president of the United States and has 96% approvals in the Republican Party is because he is a fighter, something that the Republican base has been wanting forever and has never had. Now, Trump is fighting with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. And you may have seen a Twitter hashtag come up to the extent that Twitter allows it to come up. They control their hashtags, as you know. But it's called Cold Case Joe. And if you've been following MSNBC, and if you ever want to harm your mind by watching Morning Joe with his Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski, you want to hear his vicious anti-Trump morning show 5 days of the week, in which they accuse Trump of having dementia and being orange, and all these nasty personal attacks. Well, Trump has been fighting back, and he's been highlighting something that happened in the office of Joe Scarborough, who was then a congressman from Florida, back in 2001, in which a young woman was found dead in his office. And her name is Lori Klausutis. And so Trump is bringing this out. He's saying, hey, this is a cold case. We've got to investigate this. Very suspicious. What was going on with the death of this woman in Joe Scarborough's office? And I'll tell you what, Joe and Mika already turbocharge attacking Trump all the time, but now, you know, like Mika is trying to get Trump thrown off of Twitter. She wants to talk to the manager of Twitter. She's asking for @Jack to get Trump thrown off of Twitter, and not happy. Not happy at all. But just so you have some idea of what this case is, and this is some information that I just grabbed on this, but a 28-year-old, go back to 2001, summer of 2001, a 28-year-old female staff member was found dead in the office of Joe Scarborough, congressman from Florida, and officials in Fort Walton Beach, Florida, determined that Lori Klausutis died from an accident. But there remain a lot of questionable things about how that went down and what was going on there. But apparently there was a doctor who was the examiner, the medical examiner, Dr. Michael Birkeland, who determined that Klausutis had an undiagnosed cardiac arrhythmia that caused her to faint and hit her head on a desk in Scarborough's office. And so that has been at least how it was excused at the time. And interestingly, this Lori Klausutis was a marathon runner, a really healthy young woman, ran marathons, huh? And knowing, you know, a little bit about, you know, healthcare and so forth, I would say that generally if you're going to run a marathon and you have an undiagnosed cardiac arrhythmia, it would show up in a marathon, not when you're like sitting around an office probably somewhat sedentary. Okay, apparently this Michael Birkeland has had a very sketchy past and sketchy history in some of his practice. And apparently I've seen somewhere he lost his license at some point in his career. And so let's see here. Jennifer Van Bergen, writing at Truth Out, has this little summary of the oddities surrounding Lori Klausutis' death. Congressman Scarborough resigned only 6 months after his reelection. So Scarborough resigned right around the time that this Lori Klausutis was found dead in his office. And apparently the reason, the rumors around the reason, were rumors of marital infidelity, and recently divorced husband Scarborough wanted to spend more time with his sons. Okay? The medical examiner had his license revoked in another state. Why? And he lost his license by falsifying autopsies. Interesting. And the medical examiner's supervisor, Birkeland's supervisor, had contributed thousands of dollars to the congressman to Scarborough's election campaign. And there are apparently contradictory reports about whether there was a visible head injury or not. And then a bunch of inconsistencies about the cardiac arrhythmia, mentioning, you know, that Klausutis was a marathon runner. Also, although she had suffered a fractured skull and a contra coup bruise on the opposite side of the brain, the injury could not possibly have been caused by a physical assault. And I don't know if that's phrased properly there, but I think that they're saying that it doesn't look like it was just from a fall. There's some questions. And there's questions of whether the office was locked and the lights were on. One report says the door was locked and the lights were off. Another report says the door was unlocked and the lights were on. At any rate, so question marks there about some of that stuff. And so this cold case, and oh, looks like we did just lose the call on that. What do we think about President Trump highlighting this, bringing this up? And I tell you what, I am not too interested in hearing complaints from Scarborough and Mika when they have been so personal in their relentless, obsessive hatred with Donald Trump. They have been after Trump every single day over the past couple of years. And again, below the belt, one below the belt hit after another. And so here's Trump fighting back. What do you think of Trump fighting back in this fashion? Do you think that's, can you imagine a president doing this? I mean, it's a little bit shocking to see. And Trump keeps tweeting about it. He was tweeting about it even earlier this morning, referencing the cold case and all the suspicious things that were going on around the death and the resignation of Scarborough in Congress. And clearly Scarborough and Mika do not like this, and they want to get Trump thrown off of Twitter for it. But it seems to me like if you're going to start attacking Trump in that personal way, that, you know, can't he attack back? Isn't that fair play? And you know Trump's a fighter. And I'll tell you what, I mean, he's been attacked so hard and that when he attacks back, I do think before people attack Donald Trump in the political space that they think it over a little bit before they do it, because they know that they might get, you know, a 70-some million Twitter follower account that President Trump has. Of course, the biggest megaphone in the world basically is Donald Trump's. And let me see. I just pull up how many Twitter followers he has. 80.2 million followers. You know, you better think twice before you're going to start throwing stuff at Donald Trump. But see, the media does it so en masse. Everyone attacks Trump in that way. And so they can get away with it by being so voluminous. But, somehow or another, Trump has decided that, you know, he's going to accept the fight. He's going to accept the challenge from Joe and Mika. And so I think a lot of people, you know, when you see Joe Scarborough on that television screen, what is one of the first things you think? You know, if you've been following Trump, you say, I wonder what happened back in 2001. I wonder, why did Scarborough resign back then? Why did he resign under suspicious circumstances? What happened to the young woman tragically found dead in his office back then? I mean, that's going to be the kind of thing you're going to have to be at least wondering about, right? And so I noticed this, by the way, that Scarborough doesn't seem to come out and personally respond to this. He seems to have Mika go out and do it for him, his co-host and his wife. Why doesn't Scarborough come out and do this personally, address these issues, you know, like maybe you would say a man should do, you know? If Joe Scarborough wants to take on Trump, why does he seem to have his wife going out there and being the one who's complaining to Twitter and who is trying to get Trump deplatformed, thrown off of Twitter? And by the way, can you imagine what would happen to Twitter if they threw Trump off? Shem Horn, one of my favorite Twitter people, was saying, you know, hey, you know, if Twitter were to throw Trump off, I mean, everybody would abandon Twitter en masse. Twitter would not survive as a platform if they got rid of Trump. And that would be how that would play. And I think that's accurate. I know I'd be out of there. We'd find some other platform wherever Donald Trump would be tweeting, so we can have an actual free press, free conversation. Anyway, I'll just say that I think Trump, you know, being a fighter, that's politics today, and you got to fight. That's just the story. And if you don't fight, you roll over, I mean, you will get destroyed. Fighting is the only way, and it's too bad that it's come to that. You got to be a little reluctant about it, but you got to do it. All right, be right back.
News Talk 710, KNUS. News Talk 710, KNUS. Listen live at radio.com. This is Backbone Radio with Matt Dunn. News Talk 710, KNUS. It sounds like
Times Like These. This guy was the drummer for Nirvana. Drawing a blank on his name right now. What was that guy's name, the drummer for Nirvana? This band's called the Foo Fighters. Yeah. Anyway, he's got a name. But anyway, welcome back. Times Like These. And yeah, let's start delving into... I just had a text message just asking, hey, a little bit more speculation on the reasons behind the coup plotting and the latest on Obamagate, Spygate. That's coming. But I have an individual who, you know, I'm fighting a losing battle on turnips here tonight. And it seems like Backbone Country likes turnips, and I am anti-turnip. I just have never learned to really enjoy eating a turnip in life, and I've tried. It's not for lack of trying. Oh, Dave Grohl. Thank you, my man. Thank you. Dave Grohl, G-R-O-H-L. And but Anita here is joining the program and maybe had a thought or two about turnips. And Anita, I'm so delighted you could check in. And I presume, are you in the pro-turnip category? Where are you coming down?
I am pro-turnip.
Okay.
And years ago, I had the guardianship of my niece and nephew who hated turnips. And so what I did was I experimented with them, not always telling them what I was doing, and I found there were different ways that they would accept what I prepared. One was mixing turnips and potatoes and mashing them and putting butter on them, like mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
Okay, they like that.
It's adding a little nutrition, too. And I think the turnips probably, like, have some, like, good things about them. You know, they taste so bad, they've got to be, like, good for you, right?
Right. And then you can put them in regular beef stew recipes or vegetable soup recipes.
Mm-hmm.
They're also very good if you cube the turnips and the potatoes and put them in ham broth.
Wait. Ham broth.
Yeah.
Ham broth.
Yeah, and okay. It makes like a soup, and I serve that more as a side dish. Not a side dish, like an appetizer.
An appetizer, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Anita, okay, you're experienced here in this. So you know, when you were cooking for some younger people who weren't passionate about turnips, you found a way, you found a workaround. Several of them, sounds like.
Mm-hmm. But the only thing I couldn't get them to eat was peas.
Peas? No peas.
To this day, they're in their 40s and they won't eat peas.
Huh. Did you try all kinds of contrivances on peas and no success?
didn't work. The only peas they eat are snow peas.
Yeah, okay.
Wow.
See, and that's I got to tell you, I don't like peas out of a can, but I do like the snow peas. And we plant those, you know how you plant those early. Mm-hmm. Are you a gardener, Anita?
Yeah, they need a frost.
Yeah, the first thing that goes in has to be those sugar snap snow peas. Get those in kind of on the edge of the garden. And yeah, those are about, I think we've got them, you know, like 12, 14 inches. Some of them are rising, but no peas yet.
But, no, too soon.
Yeah. Well, okay, so I actually jotted down everything you said about those turnip recipes, and I think I'm going to, you know, sit down. We're going to have a family huddle and conference about how we can disguise turnips for me and for my three little kids who aren't there yet on turnips.
Well, the kids were 8 and 4 when I changed their culinary taste.
And if they don't eat peas to this day, will they get near a turnip? Do you know anything about where they are now?
Oh, yeah, they'll eat turnips any way I fix them.
Okay. All right. Well, great. So, Anita, may I say you've been extremely helpful.
Well, thank you. Good luck and happy turnips.
Yeah, and yeah, the story, just in case anybody missed the first hour, is that we planted our garden. I did all the rows and all that, and I left a few rows for my wife, and then I go off to work, right? And I come back and find out she planted 3 full rows of turnips. And so I've been, you know, emotionally quite distraught since then, you know, maybe a little, just not quite my normal self, kind of just on edge about this, you know, not being a turnip person. And just, yeah, soliciting advice, what to do in this particular situation. And Anita, yeah, you've really come through. So,
well, thank you.
Yeah. And yeah, we're going to have 100+ of these things soon. So I'll do turnip updates as the season goes on.
Sounds like fun. Okay.
All
bye.
Right. Yep. Thank you, Anita. And yeah, you see, that's the kind of resourcefulness and sagacity you find in Backbone Country. Ladies and gentlemen, right there, Anita. And I've got all that written down, the different recipes and ways to disguise turnips to actually get them successfully ingested. And yes, in come the text messages. One says, slice them super thin, very refreshing. Who knew? Okay, this could be a turning point in my culinary evolution tonight, right here, this Memorial Day weekend. At any rate, and a little shorter on time, I was going to do a little bit more of a segment, but just so we have, what are some of the Spygate developments that have happened this week? What are some of the biggies? And there's a bunch. And it's like, the stuff is coming down. It is happening one thing after another. And that's why I say it's kind of a dangerous time. Because when you get these deep state people cornered, they're already like dangerous people. But when you get their backs to the wall, you start wondering what they're going to do. I mean, you know, maybe they might like conceivably even try to like shut down the entire economy to use like a virus to say, well, we got to shut down the economy and Trump can't have rallies anymore and we have to vote by mail. Yeah, so we can cheat to win, right? Deep state. But the Susan Rice memo was declassified, and guess what? It throws Comey under the bus. And I think that's very interesting that Comey is getting thrown under the bus by Trump, by Rumler, his fixer attorney. Well, maybe I'll hold on my little update here. Let's go right to the phones. And Amber in Denver, welcome aboard. What's on your mind, Amber?
How are you?
Doing so well, thank you.
Wonderful. Well, I just wanted to respond to your question about Trump. I absolutely love the fact that he fights back. You know, it's a wonderful thing. I think it's something that Republicans rarely ever do. And like I told your call screener, I love the fact that he ain't no punk. And he doesn't let him throw things his way. He always comes back, and he comes back twice as hard.
And that's like the cold case Joe thing I was talking about. So you're okay seeing that level of fighting, huh?
Absolutely. And I think that they deserve it, and he gives it to them good. And I appreciate that. Then really quickly to kind of respond to the whole Joe Biden, you know, stupid comment of the week, which
yeah, the you ain't black thing. You ain't black, he says.
I got up this morning and took a shower, got dressed, checked in the mirror, and I'm voting for Trump, and I'm still black.
Really, but Biden says you're not, Amber. He says you're not black.
So he definitely does, and it's truly one of the most ignorant things I have ever heard.
Yeah.
Coming out of the mouth of a presidential candidate.
Would you say it's pretty offensive, right? I mean,
it's overly offensive.
Pretty bad.
And it's racist. And, you know, they're always talking about what Trump says and how he says it. And how they are looking past this, I have no clue.
Yeah.
Joe Biden is insane.
Well, Amber, you're not looking past it. We're not looking past it. The American people, I don't think they're going to look past it. This is so across the line. But Amber, delighted you checked in. Stay close with us if you would. We'll be right back.
KNUS Denver, a Salem Media Group station. This is Backbone Radio with Matt Dunn, News Talk 710 KNUS.
Memorial Day weekend.
I will always do my duty, no matter what the price. I've counted up the cost. I know the sacrifice. Oh, and I don't want to die for you. But if dying's asking me, I'll bear that cross with honor. Cause freedom don't come free. I'm an American soldier, an American. Beside my brothers and my sisters, I will proudly take a stand. When liberty's in jeopardy, I will always do what's right. I'm out here on the front lines, sleep in peace tonight. American soldier,
American soldier, let's do a little salute to the American soldiers that haven't made it home on this long Memorial Day weekend, and they are the reason we are still America and that we are free. And we need a few blue state governors to realize that yes, we are a free nation, and they're locking their own blue state citizens up at their own political expense. We'll cover some coronavirus updates as the show goes on. But hey, you know, it's time. Let's get this deal back opened up here. We're ready. And I'll tell you what, the turnip texts are coming into the studio again, you know, a little, you know, friction in the Dunn household over all the turnips we have in the garden right now. And one texter says, I think 3 rolls of turnips would be enough for the whole state with a few left over, although I have had them in Indian food and enjoyed them. They do a very good job of making the taste. Another says, I put turnips in my chicken soup, the best. Another says, slice them super thin, refreshing. I could keep going here. Here's another one just came in. I hear you say you don't like turnips or rutabagas. You are distraught. Do you like yams? Are you a sweet potato aficionado? You have to distinguish the group of cold root veggies. So many are so well, but many have to be mashed with butter and cream. And then this individual says, hey, great conversation, Dr. Matt. That's very nice. That's very nice. And by the way, I love sweet potatoes. And we know we grow some rutabagas from time to time. And, you know, I wouldn't like say I'm a huge rutabaga fan, not like in the fan club. But, you know, they're all right. I like them, you know. Anyway, but turnips are like, man, I have a – and canned peas. I do remember – and this is – should I do more Dunn family household? One time early in marriage, wife and I, you know, cooking food and – We almost never eat mac and cheese. Until we had kids anyway, we never ate mac and cheese. You know, you're like, hey, that's probably not healthy, right? So we would never. But then, you know, you have kids, and so you eat mac and cheese, right? And then one night, my wife thinks she's like trying to like add some nutrition into mac and cheese, and she pours in like a whole can of peas, canned peas in the mac and cheese. And I have to say that I still have not forgiven her for. I mean, you know how you hold grudges, and they can go on for an entire marriage, and I'm just kidding. But the peas that kind of ruined some mac and cheese. You want my opinion? You know, we just joked about it, laughed about it. You know, not like a big deal, right? You know, but still, I mean, that was a massacre. Anyway, okay. So anyway, 303-696-1971, and I don't know if anybody has more to say about turnips. I mean, you are invited because I am like the only one who doesn't like them around here. At any rate. I was, let's start hammering away on some of this, you know, the Spygate stuff. It's ramping up. And that Rick Grenell became the DNI, Director of National Intelligence Acting. And he just actually declassified stuff. We've been waiting for years, and we've been having all these debates about Spygate, and we've been trying to work with information that has not been out there and has been, like, blotted out, and you have to, like, read documents with all the key stuff. It's, like, hidden and what they call redacted, right? And so Grenell shows up and just starts ripping the Band-Aid off stuff, and it's, like, incredible. We've got all this stuff to work with now, and it seems like, you know, every few days there's, like, another – he brings these things in satchels. He brings satchels of declassified information, and oh, the deep state there, they're like panic city, man. Adam Schiff has had all these nasty tweets towards Grenell. The entire, like, spook apparatus is saying, oh, Grenell, he's this unqualified guy, and he's like, he's not even trained as a spy, and he's doing all this spy stuff. Yeah, well, whatever. Anyway, this is glory. Anyway, and so John Ratcliffe, congressman from Texas, who's always on with Maria Bartiromo, he has now been confirmed as the new DNI, and the Democrats could not get rid of Grenell fast enough. he was like throwing so much stuff out there. They're like, hell, we got to get Ratcliffe. Even though we didn't want Ratcliffe, now we'll take Ratcliffe because Grenell has been so so good. Yeah, Grenell. I want to see Grenell like be like the new FBI director, or maybe even the new attorney general, because Barr, I wish I'd saw a little bit more fight out of Barr sometimes. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, but we got to get Ratcliffe to appointed to at least one really great high-up position in the Trump administration, or maybe like several. Maybe like have him do like a – maybe like inspector general of everything is what Grenell should be. So we've got a new DNI, and Ratcliffe, by the way, he's got big shoes to fill, but he's great. He knows where to look. He knows where the bodies are. He knows exactly what to declassify. And so I'm excited. Oh, it's going to be a long, hot summer for the deep state. So I've mentioned a time or two that Comey's been thrown under the bus in that Susan Rice CYA memo. And so how is Comey going to react to that? We'll look at that here a little bit. Christopher Wray has opened a investigation into the FBI to look back at how this whole Russia thing is it's a Ray reversal, Sundance at the Treehouse calls it. FBI launches internal investigation surrounding FBI conduct in Flynn case. So Ray has had to turn on a dime. I mean, he was like going to try to hold the lid down on everything related to Flynn, everything related to Spygate, as long as he possibly can, hopefully past November in his mind, right? Ray is a disaster. Horrible FBI director, not even one inch better than Comey. But he has had to do this, okay, because both Grenell and Durham have invaded the FBI fiefdom, where, you know, Ray, again, is trying to hold that lid on. But Grenell, Durham got inside there, and Ray has to do a little investigation. And it's kind of interesting to me, because I think John Brennan was in particular looking at Ray and saying, Ray, you got to stay strong. You cannot wilt here. You cannot fade here, okay? And so Ray opened this investigation on the 22nd, Friday. He announced this. And is it cosmetic? Is he going to, like, FBI investigating itself? Is it going to really do anything? But, you know, some people seem to think so. And so, you know, for me, the jury's out. We'll see. But this, I think, is somewhat significant in that John Brennan on the 15th, okay, now Ray opens the investigation on the 22nd. Now the 15th, John Brennan, the disgraced former communist CIA director, was saying this in an interview. Listen to this one, where you know, Brennan is talking about how what a remarkable guy Ray is, and he hopes Ray stays strong. But listen, we have information now that Ray is not staying strong. But listen to Brennan here. This is on MSNBC talking to Brian Williams, who is like the face of fake news incarnate, that guy. Listen to this one.
Now, I just think that what Richard Grenell and others are doing now raises some serious questions about the ongoing capabilities, focus of the intelligence and law enforcement community. If they are being manipulated at the very top for political purposes, who knows what is happening as far as our defenses against these determined efforts on the part of our enemies. And as we have talked about the upcoming November election, how the Russians and others are going to seek to try to once again interfere and influence the outcome. I just am very concerned that some of those at the very top are not going to fulfill the duties that are entrusted to them by the American people. And so I'm just hoping that individuals like Chris Ray, who is a remarkable public servant, will continue to stay strong in the face of this type of abominable abuse of authority.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Grinnell is abusing authority by just declassifying stuff. When you guys plot a coup, Brennan, and we want to, like, let the American people know what you're doing, you're saying that's abuse of authority? I don't think so. But you heard that there at the end, where Brennan goes out of his way to say Chris Ray is a, quote, remarkable public servant. Oh, he's so remarkable. I love you, Chris Ray, says John Brennan, the coup plotter. Keep staying strong. He says, stay strong, Ray. Don't wilt. Don't buckle. Keep that lid on no matter what. I don't care what. Stonewall, do whatever you got to do. But then, like I said, that was the 15th that Brennan said that. So, you know, Brennan is always grimacing. You ever see a picture of him? He's like got this massive, like, grimace, like he just smelled something really, really bad. That's Brennan. Maybe it's himself, you know. Anyway, so on the 22nd, the FBI issues a statement. Quote, FBI Director Christopher Wray today ordered the Bureau's Inspection Division, the INSD, to conduct an after-action review of the Michael Flynn investigation. So I think Brennan's grimace has got to be slightly more profound right now when he sees that Ray is actually having to buckle. You know that if Ray, you know, he's been sitting on this ever since he's been in there, that if Ray had any choice in this matter, he would keep the lid on. He would stonewall. He would hide this. He would keep everything hidden behind the piano if he at all could. But Grinnell is declassified stuff, and Durham is right there. Durham has jumped in Ray's chili. Durham has invaded the FBI. And I think, see, you had to get a workaround to get around Ray. And so I think Durham and Grinnell, you had that combination, a kind of a pincher movement, that they've got some information about the FBI and the FBI's handling of the Flynn case that Ray cannot hide. And so he has to conduct this investigation because it's going to end up looking so bad for the FBI that he has to get a little bit ahead of this. And so, like I said, Ray can't hold the lid on anymore because the information is coming out no matter what Ray does. And if he tries to still block it, then he ends up maybe also joining Comey as being the fall guy for a bunch of this stuff. Okay, now I'm just getting warmed up on the Spygate action. Oh, it's like heavy, heavy, heavy. Be right back.
News Talk 710 KNUS. Listen live at radio.com. Now, back to Backbone Radio with Matt Dunn. News Talk 710 KNUS.
What's Kelly Willis?
Was anybody here last Tuesday when they put you in the ground? I hope your soul is resting easy. I hope it's peace you found. You're still in my arms and in my eyes. In my heart, why did we let things get between us and push us apart? Oh, Isaac, that day at Chimney Rock, when you took me as your bride, was the first time I've ever felt such happiness inside. And if there is a God, I hope he knows.
There we go. A little Kelly Willis there, a little conversation graveside there, which kind of fits Memorial Day weekend. And welcome back. Yeah, we sit here in the gray, the clouds, the rain here, and I hope tomorrow is a little bit more of a Memorial Day kind of day. We were talking about how it seems a little bit more like almost like Labor Day, not Memorial Day anyway. Here we are. And big thunder on Spygate / Obamagate related matters. And I'm just going to be covering a few things here. Lindsey Graham has named 63 different names that he is going to be bringing before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Okay, and I do think that is one of the things that is also prompting Chris Ray to have to move a little bit, because among the names on Lindsey Graham's list is Joe Pientka, who is the FBI guy who was the other person along with Peter Strzok to go in and do that initial interview of General Flynn back in January of 2017. Pientka has been hidden, hidden away, buried alive by people like Ray and the FBI. But Lindsey Graham has at least signaled that he would like to see Pientka come forward. And another one is David Archie, another FBI individual who authored the Archie memos, which Sundance at the Treehouse has written exhaustively about, which do describe more of the FBI shenanigans involved around the entire Spygate plot and, yeah, the setting up of General Flynn. So now that's kind of moving. I want to hear from Pientka. It's absurd that we have not heard from Pientka yet, because I do think he has a story to tell, and a big one, if he is forced to tell it. Okay? And one other one before the phone lines is Richard Burr is the Senate Republican chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, meaning the Senate Intelligence Committee. And he has been a Russia hoaxer all the way along and a better of what the Mueller hoax was up to and an anti-Trumper all the way along. Richard Burr, bad. He's not running for re-election. He's awful. And I kind of figured he was going to just like sail off into the sunset and leave office and nothing was going to happen to the guy. But he's got some fingerprints on some pretty sketchy stuff. Anyway, he just had to resign the Senate Intel Committee chairmanship. He had to get off of that because he's been caught with an insider trading problem. And apparently the FBI raided either Burr's home or something, but they got his cell phone. And they got some information on Burr. And so Burr just said, well, hell, I better get off this committee. And I was like, wow, stuff is happening. Now they're in a position where they can put a little pressure on this Burr guy. Pressure on Burr is a very good thing. He needs some pressure, and he has some stories to tell, and how disgusting it is to know that the Republican Party is stepping people like Burr and Paul Ryan and Trey Gowdy even, and even Lindsey Graham all the way along, have been aiders and abettors of this whole Russia hoax scheme perpetuated in the Republic when Republicans were in the majority of the House and the Senate. They let that whole thing happen because Trump is the outsider and the establishment wanted to have leverage over Trump. Disgusting. But now Burr, I think, you know, ooh, where is that going to lead us? I like that there is some leverage to be used on Burr. Okay. All right. Now I'll start hammering away on Sullivan and his latest thing and the AG bar wet blanket and all that and some of the Biden Ukraine leaked phone calls. Oh, more bad news for Biden. Oh, let's get to the phone lines here. And Jim in Littleton. Hello, Jim. Welcome. And what thoughts are you having?
Well, I was just following up. It's kind of interesting that the judge, Emmett Sullivan, has said he wanted to go a different route versus missing Flynn's case.
Yes, he did.
And I remember a couple weeks ago you were talking about this, and didn't you? You had a caller saying, "No, he's not going to let this go." And it seems like you were like, "No, I think that he has to." But apparently, I think he's part of the deep state, and Sullivan
exactly
trying to get at Flynn. I hope that eventually gets dismissed. But
that's like a very good summary. Just to summarize real quick, is that I was saying that, you know, Sullivan, Judge Sullivan is boxed in here, and he has to, because if the DOJ drops the case, Judge Sullivan doesn't have any standing to try to keep it going. And so Father Hugh called up and said, no, Sullivan's going to find some way to like screw this up and keep this going. And I was like, but you know, there's no way he can, like legally. But sure enough, Sullivan jumped totally outside of the Constitution and put out that asked for amicus briefs for outside people to come in and comment on this case, which Sullivan had hitherto denied any requests for amicus briefs all the way along in the Flynn case. So he not only is 100% hypocritical on that, but 100% jumps outside the Constitution. And now he's like still digging deeper. It's a kamikaze move on his part, and I'll get to that in the next hour. But I think in the end, he's only making things worse for himself personally and for the deep state and for Obamagate in the end. But, you know, how much more are we going to have to go through here is a question mark. You have any thoughts on that part, Jim?
Well, I just think when we talk about the swamp or the deep state, it's part of the Department of Justice and it's part of the lawyer. I mean, part of the judges. They've been the ones putting the roadblocks on Trump all along here, all these federal judges. And I just think that this goes very deep. And
yes,
if Flynn has to go through this, and I think it's a great example, if Flynn and Trump are going through this, none of us are safe. And I really think that we don't really have a republic much more than You know, what's the difference between the FBI and the KGB? I guess that's my question.
And that's a very good question, and it's one that I've asked around here for years. And what's the difference in the CIA and the KGB? Interesting tweet last night from Adam Housley, who used to be a longtime Fox News reporter. Now he's independent. He came out with a tweet, and he says, you know, before he left Fox News, he was told that every mainstream media outlet has a couple of either FBI or CIA or intelligence agency embeds working on those organizations. And I've said all along, deep state media and media deep state, they are one and the same. They are synonymous. The spooks have invaded the media to the point of almost even controlling the messaging in the media. It's not a truth enterprise in the media anymore. It's a, you know, it's a Six Ways from Sunday spin to empower the intelligence community, which is, you know, Barack Obama's big thing. He loved that. He loved to spy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I agree with you, Matt. But the point is this. How can anybody that works for those agencies look a regular citizen in the face? Because, you know, they're representing an agency that has no ethics.
Yeah, and they're unaccountable. You know, they're not elected to do anything. They're just appointed people in those positions, and they want maximum power. And they're sitting over all these, you know, surveillance tools that are like more invasive than anything we've ever had. And, you know, your most talented proctologist doesn't have that amount of invasive material, you know, compared to what the spooks have these days.
Right.
But you're right. They're power mongers. Their conscience is long gone. And that's why they have to be defeated. And that's why I think, you know, we're getting mighty close to defeating them. And I think that's why it's dangerous now, because they have no way out. Great points, Jim. Thank you, sir.
We are better together. News Talk 710 KNUS.